birthday celebration, featuring Bruce Springsteen and Bernice Johnson Reagan and Joan Baez. Oh, and Democracy Now! Is hiring. We have openings for an administrative director, as well as a Linux systems administrator and fall internships. Visit democracynow.org/jobs for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Messiah Rhodes, and Charina Nadura. Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Noguera are our engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley and Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show. Yes, we're live here in the studio at Henry Ford College, and this is the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to the 4th of July. Yes, it's July 4th, 2014. This is the new WHFR Journal. John Conroy, our WHFR News Director, is here in the studio with me. My name is Jay Koronek. How's John Conroy doing today?
Very fine, Jay. Happy 4th to you and all of our listeners on this Independence Day celebration.
Yeah, and you... You've been getting around town downriver there, several celebrations in person, something in Wyandotte, did you say?
We had there was a parade this morning at 10 o'clock down Biddle, and lots of bands and lots of celebration.
Wow. Okay. And tonight in Trenton, you said there's going to be big-time fireworks.
We've got a big fireworks display right at Rotary Park. Starts around 10 o'clock. There'll be food trucks around as well and lots of celebrations.
Where is that located, Rotary Park in Trenton? How would you get there?
Well, you take 75 and take it pretty much down to West Road.
Go east.
And go east, right down to the river, just about.
Okay. Yep. Well, that's easy directions. Thank you. Yep. A lot of people in Dearborn, I commend the city of Trenton for being brave enough to hold the 4th of July fireworks on the 4th of July. Of course, it is a time when a lot of people usually try to get out of town because it's a longer weekend, right. And that means there might not be quite so many people around. But I think it's a great time to watch fireworks because a lot of the people aren't here. You know, they have left. I was driving the streets in today, and first of all, I couldn't even get a sandwich for lunch or anything because all the fast food places were closed. My favorite Coney Island is closed. Oh, my God. This is a crisis. Talk about a crisis or apocalypse here. But, there were almost no cars on the road, at least in the Dearborn area. And that was great fun driving here, you know, with no competition, as there usually is on a Friday. Here in Dearborn, of course, at the... Greenfield Village area, which is called the Henry Ford, the whole complex, which is stupid, but because isn't there a Henry Ford hotel here? The Henry, anyway. The Henry. It's always so confusing. What is it? It's a Henry. It's a Henry what? So this is the village, okay, Greenfield Village. And people, maybe they heard my show last week about parking on that road, the Village Road, just north of the, because you get a great view over the brick wall, you can see the fireworks very clearly. But a lot of people crowd in there. So I noticed as I was going home last night, everybody was parked all over Michigan Avenue Boulevard looking that way. Mm-hmm. Because I guess you can see it from Michigan Avenue and probably from Outer Drive. So all over Dearborn, people are finding their favorite open lot, open space, to stare up in the sky towards the village, and some locations are better than others, but yeah.
And similar to that in Trenton, there's Elizabeth Park is open, and people park all around Elizabeth Park to view the fireworks, and of course, Gros Eel, people line up on the riverbanks there to watch the fireworks that are shot on the other side. Mm-hmm. It's quite, mm-hmm. It's usually well attended.
Yeah, well, a lot of people out there, and it's all fun. It's just too noisy for me. Well, we have a editorial opinion from a veterinarian about how pets can be trained to tolerate fireworks noise. But I thought the reason of the day is, of course, the Declaration of Independence. It wasn't actually signed or issued today. It was sometime in June of 1776. But July 4th is when the printer got around to printing it. Because you know, typeset, you know, I think one letter at a time or whatever they were using then for printing presses. And so this was the date of the actual printing, therefore making it, they could post it, make it official posting. And what did they do? They declaimed that we declaimed our independence from England. Of course, you know, it's pretty rough because this, you know, led to a little war.
A little war.
A little battle.
A little battle.
Lots of battles. and we kind of won. The British just got tired of standing out in the open and being targets for our dirty guerrilla fighting American soldiers, U.S. soldiers, who were, we weren't called the U.S., the 13 colonies, the militia, yeah, that we had from the various individual colonies, they were hiding behind trees and shooting at these redcoats who were wearing, guess what color?
Red
out in the open. Because in Europe, and this was stupid, of course, the idea for wars was you go into battle in the open, no cover, you don't hide, you just start shooting or throwing or firing cannons, and whoever dies, dies. But you don't hide. Well, very brave,
stand out in the
but
open.
How stupid you're going to get. So the British mostly lost because they weren't dirty fighters. I mean, as they saw us, that we hid, we shot, we killed in some cases, and we ran. And so I know, you know, George Washington had an army. We had armies. And of course, we did have some direct battles, hand to hand, fist to fist. But it got started with guerrilla warfare. And I think the other interesting thing is, too, is that even when we had the Declaration of Independence, as best we can estimate, only 5% of the people who lived here in the 13 colonies were in favor of independence. Majority never, almost never wants to upset the status quo, no matter how bad it is. First of all, they think, well, what could I do? You know, I mean, I'm just one person. And they can't imagine what could be better. But 5% of us, well, actually 3% were the only ones in the militia, and another 2% agreed that, you know, to give support to the militia. That was enough.
Yeah.
That was actually enough to change the course of U.S. history. Anyway, I thought we should listen to a former president speaking the words. He was president, and he was assassinated when I graduated from high school 50 years ago this year. So that's my reason for choosing the Declaration of Independence as read by John Fitzgerald Kennedy, President Kennedy.
In the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new gods for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance, unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish their right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative power, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states, for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amounts and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us, in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province, establishing therein an arbitrary government, and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burned our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the work of death, desolation, and tyranny, already begun with circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens, taken captive on the high seas, to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages whose known rule of warfare is an indistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these united colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
That about says it as succinctly as we can put it. Those are the words themselves from the Declaration of Independence as read by President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And I think the most important part that the people of 1776 realized was the last part, that, oh my gosh, we are saying we are independent. Sort of like those terrorists. I mean, one man's terrorist and another man's freedom fighter. Mm. You heard that. But the terrorist called ISIS, and now I think they've dropped that term because they declared themselves, talk about Declaration of Independence, that all their territory in Syria and mostly northern Iraq that they have is now part of an Islamic state. So they've declared themselves an Islamic state, and I think well, they call themselves State of Islam or whatever, but they're not calling themselves ISIS anymore. And I never liked that because I used to watch the TV show ISIS, and there's a beautiful actress, Joanne Cameron, who played the part, and That was my ideal of a perfect female superhero. Anyway, I liked Wonder Woman too.
Wonder Woman,
yeah, okay. But her outfit was a little garish, you know. But nonetheless, and how dare they insult the legend of ISIS from U.S. television by taking the name anyway? Because in fact, anything you know about the actual goddess of ISIS, worshipped by Egyptians, has nothing to do with this Islamic State and terrorism. It is, you know, none of that. But nonetheless, that was the Declaration of Independence. And of course, the first part that all men have the rights to, and all women too, was, I think, implied. Yeah, even though, you know, women didn't have the right to vote in our first Constitution at all. I mean, and black people didn't either. The original U.S. Constitution said that for the sake of representation, I mean, they were free after Lincoln anyway, not initially, but for the sake of representation, you could count five slaves as three people and then elect your representatives. But they don't have to represent those slaves because they're slaves. You know, I mean, they don't have a right to vote.
No.
So there's a lot of problems with our initial Constitution. There is an editorial in the Times Herald this week, written by the Traverse City Record Eagle up there in Traverse City, that our Bill of Rights, though, remains the bedrock of freedom. That was, you know, added on. There are amendments to the Constitution in 1791. So that was how many years after 1776? Anyway,
14.
Yeah. So it was good to reinforce these basic human rights. But even then, women couldn't vote, and slaves couldn't vote, and slaves were only counted as 3/5 of a person for the sake of electing representative from your state. So there were still some problems with that early Constitution, but most of the Bill of Rights we still admire and love. Little dispute about the actual specific meaning of the Second Amendment, about the rights to have an armed militia, mm-hmm. and to write and to bear arms and so on. Is that only to roll up your sleeves? Bad joke, bearing arms. Mm-hmm. Okay. Or is it to own a gun if you're part of a local militia, an organized group of citizens, or even a small local police force defending the area? So do you get to have a gun at any time? Well, of course, in those days, almost everybody had at least a rifle, because you might go out and do some hunting.
Yep.
There was actually some animals in nature that could be hunted for food. Imagine. Not easy to do these days. You have to drive hundreds of miles to find an animal and then buy a license first, of course, mm-hmm. In order to harvest it. So things have changed, but yes, it is a day that we want to pay attention to. And I'm going to share Craig Foran's editorial with you too, because he talks about what are we really celebrating today. But a more practical thing, and that is more practical than the theory of liberty, is your pets. What are you going to do when the noise starts? Now, in my neighborhood, of course, because the village started their fireworks display in East Dearborn, we're very close to the village, a little bit more than West Dearborn. My cat always goes crazy over the bang boom, okay, runs and hides and so on. So we have some ideas here expressed from the Sunday edition of the Press and Guide by a column that I just happened to notice because it had to do with pets and so on. It's on page 8A, if you want to look it up there. Pets can be trained, says this local veterinarian, and her name is, what a name, Dr. Toinette Straczynski-Brochet. It's a hyphenated last name. Straczynski wasn't long enough. She had to marry somebody and keep his name, too. So it's Toinette Straczynski-Brochet. So good for her. Anyway, she's a veterinarian out in Carlton. Carlton, that's Carlton. Somewhere down in near Flat Rock, I guess.
Rockwood.
Yeah. Yep. Well, good for her. But apparently she has this column regularly in the Press and Guide. She says, about pets and how you can train them, okay, to tolerate fireworks noise. If there's one holiday that's not as popular as any other at veterinary hospitals, again, she runs an emergency veterinary hospital, so it means they're open. on the 4th and this weekend. So that is because fireworks and other celebrations as Midsummer Bash can trigger pet care tragedies, which means a lot of lost, sick, or injured pets. Loud noises startle and distress many pets because they have very sensitive hearing. Scared pets have been known to jump out of apartment windows, leap over or dig under fences, or chew their skin until it's raw. They may also bolt out of an open door to become lost or hit by a car. Even the ones who just tremble in terror may be safe, but they are also miserable. I guess don't take your pet in the car with you to go see fireworks.
No.
Or where it's loud and noisy.
No.
First of all, your pet may be afraid of the car, but secondly, that noise. Even calm pets, she says, Dr. Toinette, S-B, says they may seize the opportunity offered by a holiday buffet to eat something they should not. Mm. Ooh, anxiety eating. Mm-hmm. Or holiday gluttony, whatever. While most of the danger is on the actual holiday, the noise and parties can continue for days. I guess you shouldn't feed your pets pizza.
No pizza.
Or other kinds of human-type food that they're not used to, anyway. You know,
especially spicy type stuff.
Right? Yeah, no. Yeah. And then the boom starts, and uh-oh. Yep, that's a problem.
And I had a dog, collie, that his eyes would roll back in his head when the loud noises would come on. And sometimes run around in circles. We'd have to literally hold him down.
Yeah. Well, many people take this holiday as an opportunity to let off steam and do not just keep the celebration to the one day. The best defense against 4th of July problems is a good offense started weeks or months before summer. Well, it's too late now, folks. Sorry. Thank you for putting this editorial in the week before, but we're supposed to start a couple months ago. Professional trainers and behaviorists start socializing dogs and making every potentially negative experience, such as fireworks and thunderstorms, into something rewarding. If a negative experience comes with tasty treats, then your pet is going to at least tolerate it, if not welcome it. This works best when started as a puppy, but do not give up hope if your dog is already an adult. She says it's possible to teach an old dog new tricks. One way is to help your pet is to expose it to commercial recordings of thunderstorms or fireworks and then play them at increasing volume. Oh, that great. Seems like sadism to me.
It seems like cruel and unusual.
Yeah, punishment. Yeah. I mean, I don't even like loud noises. I'm not going to play them for my pet.
No.
Unless I put headphones on or earplugs in or something. No, I don't go along with that. But it's something to consider let your pets hide if they want to. I grab, like last night at home, I have a cat who's afraid of the noise, and I just grab it, I talk to it calmly, I hold it on my lap and pet it. But if they want to run and hide, that's fine. That's what I did for thunderstorms when I was 3 and 4 years old growing up in Detroit. We had terrible thunderstorms. Talk about climate change. I don't know why. It was lightning, thunder, fantastic noise. And I was scared out of my wits. And so my parents let me run around in circles and go and hide under my bed. I had a tall enough bed that I could, and I was small enough that I could do that. And it was okay, you know. Now, the one thing they did tell me, which might work on humans but not pets, is between the lightning, the flash, and the noise. This doesn't work for fireworks, but with thunderstorms, between the lightning and the noise, count how many seconds delay.
Certain number of seconds.
Right. There you go. And sound light travels faster than sound, a lot faster, almost instantaneous. But sound only travels at how many miles per hour, John? Well, it depends on where you are above sea level, but I think it's about 680 miles an hour.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So if it's 1 or 2 seconds away, if you divide by, you know, miles per hour in a minute, that means it's 100 miles away,
so many miles
110
away.
Miles away. Okay. And in a second, divide by 60 in there, it's like another mile or two, something like that. Anyway, so my parents would say for every second, it means it's a whole mile or two away. So how many seconds? So I was busy counting seconds the flash and the boom, but it meant I didn't know when the boom would happen, so it's still scary, but I was busy counting seconds.
There you go. Your mind was
on something
else.
And then after I heard the boom, I said, oh, I have nothing to worry about. The lightning strike itself, that is the blast, which already happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, you say, oh, a thunder, you know, a lightning bolt struck the ground and there was fire and damage and that. Well, if you see the flash, it's already happened. Mm-hmm. If you hear the thunder, the flash already happened, okay? If it hit the ground, you got nothing to worry about if you're still alive. You know, it's it's all done with. So there are some of those cute little mind tricks you can play with humans.
Yeah.
But not with animals, I don't think. If you've got a pet whisperer around, you know, like the dog whisperer on the Animal Planet channel, whatever his name is.
Cesar Millan.
There you go. Invite him in.
Yeah.
Invite him over to your celebration on the 4th of July. And they're also, it's unbelievable, but there are things like an anxiety wrap that it keeps the dog from panting real fast.
Oh.
I tried this on a dog that had anxiety with fireworks a year or two ago. Didn't work. But it could work because they can't expand their lungs enough to get so much oxygen that it further causes them to go crazy and pass out. But there's also products for cats, they say. I can't believe it. There's even calming caps. I can't imagine. But you want to spend money, there's also, for dogs, a series of music CDs that are clinically proven not to cover noise, but to use sound to calm canines. This is a trick, folks, like Muzak, special kind of music that always was the same volume. If you turn it up loud enough and it covers the other volume, the erratic noise, then your human ears, and I guess dog ears too, will not be able to pay attention. The dog's brain won't pay attention to the boom bang. It sort of covers it up, if you will. But it really does it in a quite effective way. But you got to get special music, special CDs that have a constant volume. It has to be recorded at a constant, solid volume. Because if it just gets soft for a second, then the boom comes in, the dog goes crazy. So anyway, make sure your pet isn't a casualty of Independence Day, it concludes. If nothing else, keep your pet inside until the celebrations are over. This will help make the holiday less stressful for you and your pet. So when you came in today, John, you said, do I want a dog? You have a dog in your car right now?
No. I'm talking about the dog I had when I was a youngster.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right, that's something different totally. So yeah. I was going to say,
I'm sorry, Jay. I was talking about a Polish dog I had from
Hot dog.
A hot dog for you.
Oh, sure. My God. Yes. Well, I might have taken that.
Chicago
I didn't get
style.
Lunch.
I've got
it. Now he tells me. I was thinking it's because of the pet story here. I was thinking it was a little. Okay, hot dogs are okay. You can take them to the fireworks. Okay, yeah, okay. But not the living dogs.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm glad we cleared that one up here.
Well, we used our basement all the time for our dog. You know, that was the best way to go.
Yeah.
Kept a thing of water down there for him.
It's a problem too if you go away for the weekend, and the dog's left here, and there's all that noise. That's got to be bad for them. There's nobody around.
Oh yeah.
You know, I don't recommend that. I'd say take them with you, but. Where are you going to go? A park or somewhere up north? There's going to be fireworks there. So whatever you can do. Yeah, maybe get a house sitter or something, a dog or a cat sitter at least to try to make them more calm by having somebody around.
Or maybe play the song, Who Let the Dogs Out?
I don't know about that, John. Okay. Well, Craig Ferrand. Okay. Well, I know we're spending about half the show talking about Independence Day, but it's a big day. So many places are closed. It's a big day out there.
It's
a big holiday. Yeah. So let me turn to Craig Ferrand, which is in the Wednesday edition, I think. Yep.
I got one too.
Page 4A. I got it. Okay. John brings in his copies of these papers so that if I can't find one, he's searching and hands me them over. Okay. This is live local news, you know. We're not pre-recorded here, folks. This is WHFR, the station making waves. We do things a little bit differently than all the other radio stations on the dial, you know. Yeah. We're live. All our volunteers, they don't have to be here, but they choose to be here to give you live programming. Oh, that's just unbelievable. What dedication.
We are here on the fly.
That's right. Okay, here's Craig Foran's comment about what we're really celebrating today, July 4th. He says, 238 years. That's how long our experiment in self-government has been percolating along. And even now, it sometimes seems that the experiment is going to blow up before we know the outcome. In 1866, 4 years after the end of the Civil War, the U.S. Supreme Court put its final stamp of approval on the model we live under today. A united group of states, partly under the jurisdiction of central federal government. That's what we have. That doesn't mean that the concept isn't periodically challenged, however. It's one of the more popular cries from the extreme right today, secede from the Union. didn't Governor Rick Perry of Texas already threaten that officially? So we don't like what's going on. We're going to secede. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. See how far you're going to get with that one. You know what happened when the South tried to secede?
Not too good.
I think it was called Civil War. Yeah. Or if you're on their side, they called it the War Between the States. So I don't think the federal government's going to let you secede, Rick. Oh, Rick... I'd let him succeed. If he wants to leave, he can leave at any time. I don't like what he's done in Texas. I have friends there, and he's been a terribly stupid governor, although elected by the people. Okay. Majority elected him somehow.
And just remember that, again, opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of any of the folks at HFC or at WHFR.
I definitely
encourage the free will thinking.
Absolutely. Don't believe anything we say without checking it out several times over and look at the other opinions. Yeah, remember, and I said this before, I have friends in Texas in Austin. Now, Austin is the city capital. That's where Governor Perry goes to work every day, or at least a few days a week anyway. But Austin is so liberal. It's like Ann Arbor of Texas.
Okay.
I mean, therefore ecology, therefore everything. And in terms of the vote in Austin, he's never elected by the people in Austin. A majority do not vote for Governor Perry, even though it is the capital of the state. A little irony there. It's the most liberal bastion, and it really is like a bastion, because it's so liberal that if you go 30 miles beyond, it's not liberal. The people are not liberal in Texas, and God bless them for that reason. But most of my friends and my spin on the world is I love Austin, Texas, and I love what they've done with the city. And it was no thanks to, you know, anything that the state government did. And yet the teachers are the ones most suffering because they're under state contract. And you think our teachers are being insulted and cut in pay and cut in benefits. Austin teachers are even worse off. It's hard to believe that you could be worse off. And they've been cut and cut and removed from power without unions and so on for years. And it's terrible. And their educational system shows it. But there's nothing the people of Austin can do about that because the teachers are under contract to the state. And so there you go. Okay. So Craig Foran goes on, though, back to his points anyway. He says, those who continue to argue for a separation from the Union cite the 10th Amendment. The power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, or reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. That's a direct quote. And then he says, and since the Constitution does not expressly permit secession, proponents have long argued the right to do so is reserved to the states or to the people. Well, of course, 1869 ruling in Texas versus White, however, the Supreme Court essentially ruled that, one, the Constitution was an outgrowth of the Articles of Confederation, and then, two, the Articles preamble was important. So before we had a Constitution, we had something called the Articles of Confederation, okay? That said, the delegates to the Continental Congress, quote, agree to certain Articles of Confederation and perpetual union between the states. And the ruling in 1869 said that the direct connection between that perpetual union in the articles within the preamble of the Constitution with the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union, that the implication was clear. Of course, that was the basis for the Civil War, that the federal government, the Supreme Court of the federal, of the federal system, said that you really can't secede. So that's why the South got into trouble and the U.S. Army was called in to show them that was the wrong idea, which is a great tragedy whenever people anywhere go to war and kill each other. But pretty important at that time not to secede. So that's not an issue. Okay. So anyway, are we celebrating something that remains a work in progress? Asked Craig Foran. He says, fireworks and happy birthday America aside, I think we're celebrating the latter. The grandest ongoing experiment in self-rule ever implemented in human history. 238 years. Something to be proud of, really, despite the ups and downs like Civil War. But an experiment that continues to bubble, boil, and challenge our most basic notions of what it means to be free and independent, yet codependent in order to protect that very freedom. So while some parade the Declaration of Independence as a call to arms in 2014 as a cry for separation, I view those chants as echoes of another time. Today, we're part of that experiment, lab rats with the same hopes, uncertainties, dreams, fears, and expectations of those who came before us. Minorities continue to fear being swallowed up and lost in the mob. The elderly fear being forgotten by the young. The poor fear being left behind forever. The middle class fear is fading away. Moderates fear becoming irrelevant in a sea of extremism. Yet, even with all those fears, as a people, we seem to always look to the future. The expectation that this experiment will continue to a successful outcome. That someday the angels of our better nature will win out over bigotry, violence, hate, and yes, fear. For in the end, FDR had it right. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, of course. Fear is our worst enemy. So as we celebrate the 238th year of this experiment, let's keep in mind that we can be smarter than the mob, brighter than the darkness, and braver than the fears that assault us. And he says that's what he'll be celebrating Friday as our great experiment today. This is Craig Foran's comment in the Press and Guide opinion page from this last Wednesday, July 2nd. I wonder if that phrase, "It's so good," was that FDR's also? He doesn't put it in quotes. He said, "Let's keep in mind that we can be smarter than the mob, brighter than the darkness, and braver than the fears that assault us." That's beautiful.
That's this.
That's a great sentiment. So I hope you take that spirit with you today and the weekend. But we're not done here. Oh, no, we're not done. Mm-hmm. Here's a big issue coming up. Just Jack Lessenberry gets a word in here. His commentary about, not Lessenberry, it's Michigan Public Radio this time, and it's a commentary from their environmental reporters from just a couple days ago about arsenic in Michigan water. That's poison, folks. Take a listen here. And we'll be back with the top stories around Dearborn and the surrounding area for this week to finish up our last 20 minutes of the show. WHFR.FM, the station making waves.
Support for this podcast comes from the Greensboro Partnership, inviting you to explore Greensboro, North Carolina when considering a business expansion or relocation. Learn more at greensboropartnership.com.
In Michigan, we have an arsenic problem that's among the worst in the nation. This is the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams. This week, we're bringing you a special five-part series, Michigan's Silent Poison, in partnership with the Center for Public Integrity and the public radio show Reveal. If you're on city water, your drinking water has to comply with a federal regulation that limits the amount of arsenic in it. But if you're on a private well, the federal and state governments do not limit the amount of arsenic in your water. It's up to you to test your well and decide whether to treat it. Arsenic occurs naturally in rock, and it can get into groundwater. Michigan is one of a handful of states with unusually high arsenic concentrations in groundwater.
There are a number of counties in Michigan that have elevated levels of arsenic.
Sheridan Hack is a research hydrologist with the U.S. Geological Survey. She's got a map of Michigan in front of her. It's color-coded to show where there are wells with levels of arsenic higher than 10 parts per billion. That's the federal standard for what's considered acceptable in drinking water.
You can see that, you know, from that map, the red coloration tends to be focused in the thumb area, which is very high concentrations, greater than 100 micrograms per liter or so.
Counties in the thumb have the highest arsenic levels in Michigan, along with Oakland, Washtenaw, and Ingham counties. But counties throughout much of the Lower Peninsula have at least some wells that have between 10 and 50 parts per billion arsenic. So if you have well water in your home, you could be drinking arsenic above what the EPA considers acceptable. Sheridan Hack led a study of arsenic in Michigan wells. She says the highest arsenic level they recorded was 220 parts per billion. Data that Michigan Radio obtained from the state show at least one well has measured even higher than that. Experts who study arsenic say it sweeps through our bodies, affecting organ after organ.
To some extent, we're learning that no organ system goes untouched.
Joseph Graziano is a professor of environmental health sciences at the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University.
There's neurotoxicity, there's cardiovascular disease, there's some evidence of diabetes, there's a whole suite of cancers, lung cancer, bladder cancer, skin cancer.
He says emerging research is finding harmful effects from arsenic exposure at lower doses.
We're seeing associations with lower and lower exposure levels. And so are we concerned about the levels that we see in the United States? Absolutely, yes.
The Environmental Protection Agency has been working to update its health assessment of arsenic. The EPA released a draft report on cancer risks from arsenic in 2008. Michael Hansen is a senior scientist at Consumers Union.
They put out their draft, and that's where they determined that based on these new data, that arsenic, inorganic arsenic, is 17 times stronger as a carcinogen than they thought.
But that draft report from the EPA has never been finalized. David Heath from the Center for Public Integrity found that a single member of Congress delayed the EPA's assessment. Heath interviewed a lobbyist for two companies that sell a weed killer that contains arsenic. The lobbyist admitted that he pushed Congressman Mike Simpson of Idaho for the delay. Simpson acknowledged that he inserted language into a report attached to an appropriations bill, and that effectively forced the EPA to lift a ban on the weed killers. Now the EPA's final arsenic health assessment has been delayed for several more years. This story was reported in partnership with David Heath from the Center for Public Integrity. That's the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams.
So watch out for that groundwater, folks, okay? And that is something to constantly ask your elected officials about. What about the arsenic levels? Because arsenic in your water, you can't see it looking through the clear glass, you know. You don't see particles or anything, and you can't smell it. Often you can smell the chlorine, which I'm not totally in favor of. But nonetheless, if we didn't have the chlorine in there, we'd probably all die from some sort of disease. So we have to watch out for that. By the way, stay tuned today after the show. Highway 61 will be live. Joanne Korchinska, our regular host and blues music director, is up north with some family. And I hope she's having a great time up there. Probably a little bit chilly. I think Traverse City was like 15 degrees in that area today. That's all I looked at. It was like 15 degrees cooler than here. And it's kind of cool out there today. It's going to be great weather here. So wish her well. And the big dog himself, Bill, is going to be coming in at 2 o'clock, from 2 to 4, and from 4 to 6, Scott Boatwright. Both WHFR volunteers that don't have to be here, but because they love it, and because they love you folks and want to give you live hosted programming, that's why we're here. It's not pre-recorded. You know, we could do that. We got the technology, but we're here live. So, John, let's go to good news here. Oh, first of all, there was that quote John pulled out below Craig Ferran's editorial, a comic, but in fact, it's a quote from Thomas Jefferson. You remember him, one of our former presidents, third president, I believe, of the U.S. 1791, he said, "I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than to those attending too small a degree of it." Ooh.
Ooh.
So, yeah. But so liberty has some problems, but you'd rather have a little more liberty and maybe a little more risk in your life because liberty is the good thing, okay? And this has to do, I'm reflecting back, and opinions expressed are not necessarily those of the college, on the Patriot Act and you know, all the liberty we've given up supposedly to protect ourselves from terrorists, like Homeland Security. Billions and billions, tens of billions of dollars. Do we really need them? What the heck are they doing? Mm-hmm. You know, just these basic questions. I mean, Homeland Security is doing raids on private people and even airport security, the TSA, I believe they're called. And I've got some nasty letters that I would translate that as, besides the indecency of their pat-downs and their attitude at the airports, they actually got like SWAT teams going around off the airports these days. I mean, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but these are excesses we don't need, certainly in a land of liberty. And we should tell our elected officials that we, like Thomas Jefferson, would rather have the liberty and have a few problems with it every now and then, then every day of our life be like living in some sort of prison. Some people are, of course, fearful and hallucinating that they're already living in prison, even though they're not. And what about our prisons last week? Good for Governor Snyder. He's firing the people providing maggoted food to our prisoners. That's a real scandal. Michigan, even though we have, get this, our prison budget to maintain our prisons in Michigan, we have so many people in prison, we spend more money from our state government on our prisons than on our education. Now, that's a sad, sad story. But we're not privatizing them. Amazing, huh? The Republicans haven't moved to that, because private prisons are even more of a hellhole because they're making a profit on prisoners. So guess what? They want more prisoners all the time. They want people to commit crimes. And as I said, that's a negative inducement.
Negative
there.
Approach, for sure.
It's like the police departments that are being supported around Michigan for buying their new police cars and their equipment by the money they confiscate from drug confiscations. You know, that's the wrong incentive. Crime supporting the police, then indirectly the police love to have crime, otherwise they wouldn't get new cop cars or new guns. Well, that's all wrong. That's totally wrong. And you can see what the extended dangers are. So we don't want private prisons, but thank you, Governor Snyder, for at least saying that something's got to change with the terrible food that has recently served in most of our state prisons. Maybe just one or two places, but it was a terrible upset this week. You probably saw it there. So watch out for the arsenic too. Okay, moving on. There are some problems with Detroit. We know Detroit is badly rated nationally. This last week, did you catch this? I'll just fill you in on this, and then you'll see where some of these ideas came with. Detroit decided to actually cut off water to tens of thousands of Detroit residents who haven't paid their bills for years. And it turns out that over half of the people in Detroit, that's over 350,000 people, are behind in their bills to one extent or the other. Okay, so groups in Detroit, when the city said it's going to cut off water supply to the people that haven't paid, which only sounds logical to some people, complained to the United Nations of this planet. That's right, in New York City. And the United Nations responded back, yes, they did. They heard the hue and cry, and they actually issued this joint statement on Wednesday. They said they agreed with the complainers from Detroit. United Nations experts declared this last Wednesday the city of Detroit's shut off of water to thousands of residents who are unable to pay their bills, quote, constitutes a violation of the human right to water, unquote, and may be discriminatory against African Americans, primarily because that's the high percentage of Detroit residents are African Americans. So whether it's discriminatory or just accidentally discriminatory is, I don't care. But the United Nations of the whole world stated this, and they went on to say, quote, the households which suffered unjustified disconnections must be immediately reconnected. And it's unjustified. Why? Because everybody has a right to water. Whoa. Yeah. And I would like to believe clean water, too, which is a problem in many countries around the world. But the UN said this, and they say, if these water connections disproportionately affect African Americans, they may be discriminatory in violation of the treaties the U.S. has ratified. See, that's the whole point. We've ratified treaties already. The U.S. government has ratified treaties that say that everybody's got a human right to water. So we're violating our own treaty with the United Nations by the city of Detroit doing this. And, of course, you know, the city of Detroit, besides saying they're going to cut off, and they haven't responded to this that I know of yet, they've also raised the water rates. The city council approved an 8.7% increase in water rates in addition to the raises over the past decade. So poor people who can't afford to pay their water bills will be less able, even more so, to not be able to pay their water bills. Oh, my gosh. And so, but I thought that was interesting that worldwide there's editorials going out now because the UN is involved and we're breaking our own treaty with the UN in terms of what we're going to do, and that is guarantee the human right to water. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Anyway, John, so how else is Detroit getting a bad rap nationally and internationally? He just got a little list here from Tim Skupik, who's
right,
an editorial writer here in Michigan.
That's right, Jay. There's a column, political columnist for MLive.com, Tim Skupik, talks about at the website, it lists the top 150 cities in the country. And as you scroll down, you can pass Grand Rapids at number 84 and arrive at the bottom, and there's Motown, 150th. Dead last.
Yeah.
And this, we are, in fairness, it is not dead last on all of the 21 or 31.
Oh, that's good.
It is number 5 in the nation, providing the most playgrounds.
Yeah, all those vacant lots. Yeah.
The city ranks fifth in the violent crime category. Detroit is number one in lowest median income, followed by Cleveland and New York City. And then the highest percentage of those below the poverty level, Newark, New Jersey, is number one, and Detroit is number five. It's in the country on that.
Yeah, so we're at the bottom, both statewide and but especially in Detroit, in a lot of rankings that we'd like to see a lot higher. So Tim Skupik didn't mention that our streetlights are coming back on in Detroit, but right. There's so many more that have to go on. I mean, streetlights only shine a spotlight on the further problems. Hey, look at all that trash. I see it now. I didn't know it was there.
Oh, mean. Yeah. We are high on the list, though, for places to have fun. That's a bright spot of that category.
I don't know who came up with that one. But, yeah, no, there's a lot of things to do, see and do in the Detroit metro area.
There are.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they say Belle Isle, which you have to pay money to get into now, but not that much, but is really coming back. And state police are patrolling it, but it's really cleaned up, and there's all kinds of activities. And, of course, the cultural institutions of the is it Arboretum? What do they call that? The indoor flower garden.
Conservatory.
Okay. Conservatory, yep. Yes. And there's the Dawson Great Lakes History Museum.
Yep.
And the zoo. Is the zoo still there? Is they open?
Zoo? I'm not sure about the zoo.
Okay. We're looking at the big dog back here. He doesn't know either. But they had some problems, you know, with animals being attacked by, not by the employees or the visitors, but by people in the middle of the night would go in and slash and dice some of the animals. That was years ago, but so I know they were closed temporarily. I think they've reopened. I think they have, but they certainly probably will now that they're under, if you will, new management as a state park.
Well, and the Grand Prix that ran a few weeks ago was a big success as well. You know.
Okay, so I'm going to shift now after the bad news about Detroit and the international reputation of what we're doing to people. And just the fact being under emergency management is no good. And we got a story about that. There's another city that is now under emergency management here in Michigan, Lincoln Park. But here's something good about Dearborn. Here's the good news, which is in the Press and Guide this last Wednesday. The city is ranked as the eighth best one to live in Michigan out of all the cities in Michigan. We're in the top 10. Okay. This is from, who did that? A group called Credit Donkey. A credit card comparison and financial education website. What do they know about Michigan? Have they ever been here? Anyway, if you trust Credit Donkey to tell you where to live, we are number 8 here in Dearborn in Michigan. And number 1 is Portage. Do we know where Portage is?
Yes.
It's out where, Bill?
Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo.
It's in the Kalamazoo area.
Okay, it's out near Kalamazoo. But Kalamazoo is not in the rank. I don't know what the top 10 are. I don't see it here. Dearborn, but number 1 is Portage. I guess it's on a lake, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Portage Lake.
Portage is on Portage Lake.
Yes,
duh.
Yes.
Duh. Okay.
The village of.
Nice vacation spot.
Okay, they say so, folks. It must be true. Dearborn is ranked ahead of Novi. And, yeah, a lot of Novi is nothing special, but some of Novi is very, very quaint and little village and that's up anyway, and we are just behind Ann Arbor. Ann Arbor just beat us out there. And Ann Arbor's nice. So the criteria was primarily these. If you don't trust the name Credit Donkey, odds of being a victim of violent crime are only 1 in 302, which is, again, that's one of the criteria. Commute time is less than 22 minutes. Most people in Dearborn live fairly close to their work. Average income is pretty good. So it's almost $47,000 a year. That's the average income in Dearborn. Number of residents who attended some college or have no degree is 22.2%. So it's very low. So we have a lot of people pretty well educated living in Dearborn. Restaurants. Oh, there's a big criteria. Mm-hmm. Restaurants per capita are 1 per 357 inhabitants. So any city with a lot of restaurants, that's why Ann Arbor beat us out. They got a lot of restaurants out there, you know, for all the college kids, too, that come in, not just residents. I wonder, they don't usually count college populations, which it must be about 50,000 in Ann Arbor or 75,000 students or 100,000 students. They're not counted as residents. So if you take all those restaurants that are mostly there because the college students are there, and divide into the population of Ann Arbor, of course Ann Arbor is going to beat us out in restaurants per capita. You see how that works? Okay, Credit Donkey. But some good news about Dearborn. We're a nice place to live, according to Credit Donkey. And, okay, who's under emergency management in our last 3 minutes? It's Lincoln Park. I think I said that. They had negotiated a consent agreement where they would keep their own administration with some power, but they would have to institute that plan. Well, their city council voted down the plan. They didn't like it. And so now Governor Rick Snyder has appointed a Brad Coulter to take over the government of Lincoln Park. So there you go. So how many do we have now? Lincoln Park joins Detroit, Flint, Allen Park, and Hamtramck as the fifth city currently under emergency management. A total of 17 government entities, local government entities, are currently undergoing some form of state intervention. The school districts, of course, of Detroit, Highland Park, and Muskegon Heights are run by emergency managers. Inkster, River Rouge, Royal Oak Township, Pontiac Schools have consent agreements, which is just in lieu of emergency manager. They've got to follow the plan. And emergency manager is a little bit more of a loose cannon. They can do whatever they want to do. So, but Lincoln Park said, no, we're not going to take that plan. Well, now they're forced to take that plan or something worse. And Highland Park and Benton Harbor School District are also in the state review process. Pontiac, Ecorse, and Benton Harbor are in post-emergency management transition periods, but with indefinite state oversight. Mm. Well, is there going to be local governments left here, folks? Is there going to be anything left? This is crazy. And some of the budgetary problems are because of state-caused issues. So the state can cause the issue and then come in whenever they want to and, in effect, take over running of your government and cut out pensions, cut out union contracts, willy-nilly. Hmm. Anybody use that term anymore?
Willy-nilly?
Willy-nilly. Okay. I mean, it's just crazy. It's just not right, folks. And thank goodness Dearborn still has enough in reserve to not qualify. But again, it's not, if the state says Dearborn is in trouble, they'll just take us over. They don't have to, we don't have to ask for it. We don't have to be broke. They can just say we're broke or not doing a good job and just come in. And that's crazy. That's complete totalitarianism. Absolutely wrong. And indefinite, this indefinite stuff. Well, gee, will we have any local government left in 20 years? I wonder. Just going the wrong way there. Okay, last but not least, we're over time. It's time for Highway 61. Don't forget Concert of Colors next weekend. We're going to be down there. Yes, we. John, you're going to swing by?
Saturday Bill? And Sunday.
Okay, he's signed up. So we're going to be there Saturday and Sunday at the Max M. Fisher Music Center. Doors open at 1 p.m. and go on to about 10 o'clock at night. There's free music and entertainment. Two different big stages. One is called Orchestra Hall, and we're going to be at the Music Box broadcasting live over the air if you can't make it down there, but it's all free. And there's another stage with live performers from 1 until 10 at night outside also, just south of the Maxim Fisher Music Center off of Woodward. So Concert of Colors, come on down and have a great time with us. We'll be in the lobby and also broadcasting live.